Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast. The What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Stronger edition. As we look back at the latest gut punch for Bengals players, coaches, and fans, a 23-all overtime tie in Philadelphia. Coming up, you'll hear radio replays, post-game comments from players and coaches, and in-depth analysis from Dave Lapham. And the Fun Facts segment returns this week, as you'll get to know the person under the pads as I visit with rookie Khalid Kareem. The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Prime Sport, the official hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since Memorable Villains. I've been listening to the Talking Sopranos podcast lately. In it, actors Michael Imperioli and Steve Sciarrippa, who played Christopher Moltisanti and Bobby Bacala on the Sopranos TV series, are going back and doing a deep dive into every episode. They've just finished season 2. The podcast comes out once a week, so I listen to it and then go back and rewatch the episode. In any case, the big villain in season 2 is Richie Aprile, who is on my short list of greatest villains in TV history, along with Gus Fring from Breaking Bad and Ramsay Bolton from Game of Thrones. Actually, about half of the cast of Game of Thrones. My least favorite villain of all time is Ben Roethlisberger. Just kidding. Now, let's get to the game. We're going to do the radio replays a little bit differently this week and break them down into three categories: the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good was the Bengals passing game as Joe Burrow threw for 312 yards, including a pair of touchdowns to a fellow rookie.
Tightly bunched formation for the Bengals. Burrow fakes a handoff to Mixon, throws into the end zone. Touchdown! T. Higgins in the back of the end zone. Beautifully floated by Joe Burrow, and the Bengals take the lead with 1:29 left in the half. First and goal from the 4. Burrow is under center, takes the snap, fakes to Mixon, looking to throw, throws it into the end zone. Touchdown, T. Higgins!
Nice.
His second touchdown catch of the afternoon, and the Bengals have a chance to regain the lead.
That second touchdown pass put the Bengals in front by 1 point in the third quarter. But on the drive after that, following an interception at the Philadelphia 44 by LaShawn Sims, the Bengals had a first down at the Philly 13 and had to settle for a field goal. One drive later, they had first and goal at the 4 and had to settle for another field goal. Turn either of those red zone opportunities into a touchdown and the Bengals almost certainly win the game. Here's Tyler Boyd, who had 10 catches for 125 yards.
That's not how you're going to win games. You know, just keep driving and getting there, like actually getting there 5 yards away, 8 yards away, 10 yards away. 3 points ain't going to win in this league. It's every week it's going to be tough. But whoever finds a way to score touchdowns is going to be the team that wins.
And that leads us to the bad. For the most part, the Bengals' defense played well. Philadelphia had 13 possessions and only scored 2 touchdowns. But those TDs came in the final seconds of each half when the Bengals had the lead.
From the 29, Wentz is back to throw. The linebacker's back into coverage. The throw caught by a wide-open Ward, and he runs into the end zone with 16 seconds left in the half. What happened to the Bengals' coverage there? Wentz ready for a shotgun snap. He has Miles Sanders to his right. 3 receivers left, 1 out to the right. Wentz has the ball. He's looking left from the 15.
Yeah, Carlos,
under pressure. Wentz now rolling right, being chased by Hubbard. Wentz will run. 5, pylon, touchdown.
The touchdown with 16 seconds left in the half came after Randy Bullock hooked a kickoff out of bounds to give Philly the ball at the 40-yard line. The touchdown with 21 seconds left in regulation to force overtime came after the Bengals got called for 2 pass interference penalties while trying to cover rookie wide receiver John Hightower. He entered the game with 1 catch for -2 yards, and those penalties added up to 28 yards on Philadelphia's final drive. Each team basically had 3 drives in overtime without being able to score, and the game ended in a 23-all tie. Here are Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow.
I've never tied in my life. So it feels strange for sure, but I know it sure as hell doesn't feel like we won. That's what I can tell you. And just so many opportunities we had out there. We just missed that one game-breaking play there at the end, you know, and there were some things from both sides, all three phases really, that were positive. It was just no game-changing moment there that took that game over for us.
It'll never be about momentum or positive experiences to me. I'm about winning. I expect to win. I know we expect to win. I'm no moral victories around here. This is a loss to me. I don't really know. We didn't win.
And that leads to the ugly.
Burrow, waiting for a shotgun snap, has the ball against a four-man rush, gets hit from behind, and is sacked back at Cincinnati's 48-yard line. On third down and eight, Burrow under pressure and sacked back at the 45-yard line. Burrow drops back to throw, try to kill a little bit of time. He's met in the backfield, and he's sacked to end the half. They fake a handoff to Mixon. Burrow pump fakes and gets sacked. He goes down as the safety Jalen Mills was closing in. Second and goal from the eight coming up for Cincinnati. Burrow has Mixon off his left hip. Catches a shotgun snap. Drops back to throw. Pocket closes. And Joe will be sacked back at the 16-yard line. Burrow's under center on first and 10. Stomps the right foot. Sends Tate in motion behind him. Burrow fakes a handoff. In trouble. Burrow trying to run. And he will be pulled down for a sack and a one-yard loss. First and 10. Shotgun snap. Play action fake. Burrow in trouble. Sacked by Graham at the 14-yard line. 1:55 left in overtime. The Bengals at their own 14. Burrow under pressure, sacked by Fletcher Cox, who beat Billy Price, back at the 6-yard line, sack number 8.
Yeah, it was ugly, all right. 8 sacks and 10 additional hits for a total of 18 QB hits in Joe Burrow's third NFL game. One particularly vicious hit by Malik Jackson knocked Burrow out of the game for one play.
Got the wind knocked out of me for about 10 seconds. They told me I had to go out for a play. I was good after that.
He was good after that, but the same can't be said of the offensive line. Here's Zach Taylor.
That's something we got to fix right away. And I don't care what play you call. You're going to have problems when you just can't block a guy for a second. And so that part is frustrating. You know, so we just got to continue to improve and give ourselves a better chance to win.
The Bengals made a change up front during the game as Fred Johnson, starting his second straight at right guard, got pulled for Billy Price. Lapp asked Zach Taylor about it after the game.
What do you do at the right guard position? Fred struggled. You put Billy in there. Billy struggled. I mean, that's a real problem area. Where do you go from here?
Yeah, we're trying to figure that out, and that's something we'll keep evaluating.
They had better find an answer for the offensive line as a whole because Burrow has been sacked 14 times in 3 games. That's a pace for 74.6 sacks. The record for a quarterback in a single season is 76. By Houston's then rookie and number one overall pick, David Carr. Here's Tyler Boyd.
Just to see him take those hits and for him to go down and for him to get injured, you know, it hurts. It makes me want to fight whoever done anything to him, you know. So, I mean, like I said, we got to figure a way to protect him, and we got to figure a way to make tough catches on our end as well.
It would help if they could run the ball. Joe Mixon finished with 49 yards on 17 carries. That's 2.9 per lug. He was greeted in his own backfield on most of his 17 attempts.
We knew we were going to have to get the ball in the perimeter against these guys. They got a really stout front, you know, as good as we're going to face this year, you know. And so they don't make it easy for you to run the ball. And so, again, that's not what we want from our run game. There's no question about that. We got to do a better job there.
After 3 games, the Bengals are 0-2-1, where they could be, perhaps even should be, 2-1. And they have tied an NFL record they wanted no part of. They have failed to win their last 15 games, decided by one score, to tie the all-time mark set by the Chicago Cardinals from 1938 to 1941. Time for some post-game analysis with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Well, Lapp, that was different. 23-all overtime tie in Philadelphia. A game it felt like the Bengals had a million opportunities to win. And as a result, it's a tie that feels like a loss.
No question. I think both teams feel that way. I don't think both teams were crisp by any stretch of the imagination in their execution. I'm not saying that they didn't give effort. You know, I think both teams, you know, they weren't loafing. They weren't. It just wasn't that well played. And, you know, I maybe there's a little bit of almost trying too hard, or in a situation where, oh man, I got to make a play, so I tighten up and grab instead of trust my technique and coverage. I grab and I have a pass interference penalty, or you know I just don't run the route at the proper depth, or I don't pass protect, and my three technique, the defensive tackle that's on my outside shoulder just blows up the football field like he's a free runner, and the quarterback has no opportunity. I mean, again, football is the ultimate team sport. There's 11 pieces. If you only have 9 or 8 operating effectively, you're not going to get it done. You have to have all 11 or no more than one mess up. I mean, if 10, sometimes you can get by, but man, if you have multiple mess ups on the same play, you're in trouble.
Joe Burrow was sacked 8 times. He was hit an additional 10. 18 hits on your quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's what post-game press conference guys were saying. 18 was the pressures, not the sacks.
And hits, yeah, not hits. Just pressures. Yeah.
Hits, yeah. Actual hits on the quarterback. So, again, right guard was I-71. I mean, it was they were in the passing lane on I-71, and there was nothing that was deterring them. Start out with Fred Johnson at right guard, not working out. Billy Price at right guard, didn't work out. I know they've got Alex Redmond on the practice squad, Dan. I would put him in there yesterday. Alex Redmond knows he has an understanding of what they're doing. He's worked next to Bobby Hart. You know, he's worked next to Hopkins. It wouldn't be that tough of a scenario. I know, can they trust him to stay healthy? That is a big issue. You know, that trust has to be built up. But, man, I'm telling you, the guy, from a physical standpoint, he can play it. He can finish. He's one of the best finishers in football. I'd give it a shot. I mean, obviously, they're still searching for answers at right guard. Why not try him as an answer?
Yeah, honestly, I guess I expect that to happen next week against Jacksonville. In addition to all of the pressure allowed, Joe Mixon carried 17 times for 49 yards. And on nearly every one of those 17 carries, he's dancing away from a hit in the backfield.
It's got to be unbelievably frustrating to him. And you know, the pin and pull stuff, I saw quite a bit of that today, but there was no pinning. You know, the pulling was happening, but the pullers were getting knocked off at times by penetration. The pin's not pinning people. So, you know, the penetration in the backfield and Joe Mixon having to make cuts time after time after time in his own backfield have to be a big, big source of frustration. I mean, up front, have to operate at a better level of efficiency. All 5 guys, not just every single play. 4 happens, doesn't happen with the 5th. 3 happens, doesn't happen with 2. It's just not going to work. It has to be, I've said this a million times, I'm going to say it again, it's like a fist. When you make a fist, there are 5 components to a fist. Curl your 4 fingers, wrap your thumb. It's like an involuntary reaction. And if 5 members of the offensive line are playing together, it's like making a big, strong fist. If 4 and you don't have the 5th, you don't have a fist. You know, you're a lot weaker. They have to start operating and functioning as a group.
The Bengals signed a mid-level free agent to help the offensive line, Xavier Suofilo. Unfortunately, he's injured right now. They didn't draft an offensive lineman until the 6th round, Hakeem Adeniji. I hate to look ahead already to next year's draft and next year's free agency, but they're going to have to prioritize, whether it's their first draft pick, whether it's all the money they spend in free agency, on giving Joe Burrow protection.
No doubt. And you know what? You don't really want to do this because I know Adeniji needs some time to develop. But athletically and physically, from what I saw at training camp, he cuts the mustard. You know, and maybe throw him in the mix and in the uncertainty, the equation that can't be solved at right guard. It's a lot of pressure on a rookie, you know, that's a 6th-round pick, a rookie offensive lineman who has played more tackle than guard. But he played guard at the Senior Bowl and operated well there against good players. You know, at this point, absolutely nothing would be off the table. Nothing would be off the table as far as I'm concerned because it's just not happening at that spot.
I went back this week and looked at video of the last time the Bengals played the Eagles. They beat Carson Wentz's rookie year. The final score was 32-14. Andy Dalton had a great game that day. He passed for 332 yards, passer rating of 130. And when I watched the video, the time that he had to throw deep balls was incredible. Time and space. pocket was wide, nobody in his face. And it made me realize that when we keep talking about this stat about Burrow's, you know, poor passing completions on throws 20 or more yards down the field, how many times has he had a ton of time to throw? I mean, there have been times he hasn't been hit, but where he was really comfortable back there, stepping into the throw, not worried about getting hit at the end of the play.
Not only time, but like you said, space and vision. If the defensive tackle is crushing the middle of the pocket every time, you don't have time to forget trying to find open receivers. You don't have time to get out of the way. I mean, you know, at times it's just tough to watch. You know, he did a pirouette out of the pocket, you know, to try to extend and create a play, and it worked out, although they nullified it by T. Higgins stepping out of bounds and being the first guy to touch the ball when he stepped back in. But then he's pirouetting in the pocket. When you have a quarterback that has to turn and spin, I mean, if he gets hit when he's got a right leg planted in the ground, pirouetting or whatever, and he gets hit in the lower leg, it's ACL.
Yeah.
You know, it's like shredding ligaments. I mean, that stuff scares the crap out of me. I mean, he's more vulnerable there in that pocket trying to do some of the things he's doing to avoid contact than he is outside in space. And it's starting to really be scary. You don't want guys at your feet. You don't want guys. I mean, if I'm a quarterback, the way this pocket is collapsing in the middle, when you throw the football and you follow through, you don't want to hit a shoulder pad or a helmet and break your finger, break your hand. We lost Kenny Anderson 1 year by that happening. He's throwing a football and he follows through in a preseason game and he clips his index finger, you know, on a helmet and is done for, you know, the first 6 weeks of the season or whatever. And we're done. You don't want to see that happen, you know, because somebody just gives up too much penetration in the pocket. I mean, that's the first step. The first step is solidifying the interior of the pocket. You know, look, I'm not saying that it's perfect. Jonah Williams got beaten early. He got beaten badly, quickly at left, but he was fine the rest of the game. And that's what you want to see. You want to see a guy compartmentalized. Okay, what did I do wrong? Yep, I leaned. My head, I ducked my head. I leaned forward. Trouble. Didn't do it again rest of the game. Man, inside, it's like, okay, let's pull this guy, try this guy. And as a coach, it's got to be, you know, disturbing to say the least. I mean, you're trying to find an answer. You're scrambling to find an answer, and there's no answer at this point to be found. That's why I think, man, I have a feeling that's why Redmond's back. Redmond's on the practice squad. Redmond could be, you know, elevated quickly.
Let's run down some of the blown opportunities in this game.
Yeah.
Eagles first possession. The Bengals come up with an interception. Logan Wilson off the tip ball by DJ Reader. Bengals start at their own 44. Three and out.
Yep.
Get nothing. To the second quarter, Alex Erickson with a nice punt return. 15-yard penalty at the end of the return. They start at the Philly 38. Don't even pick up a first down. Settle for a 48-yard field goal. Then, once they started moving the ball, in the second half, first down and 10 at the 13-yard line. Have to kick a field goal. First down and goal at the 4-yard line. 5-yard penalty from there. Wind up kicking a field goal. And that's the game. I mean, when you have that many opportunities, either close to midfield or, you know, first and goal or first and 10 inside the red zone, you can't come away with 3-0 and win.
No question about it. Ball game, you know, case closed. And when the Eagles at the end of the first half had an opportunity and drove and got in the red zone, touchdown. At the end of the football game, when they drove, got in the red zone, had to have a touchdown. The Bengals lost this game in the red zone. I know it's a tie, but they should have won the football game. They didn't get a win. They didn't get a loss. They did not get the win, though, because of the red zone. The red zone failures negated the turnover. And, you know, to me, this turnover stuff is starting to get old because the Cincinnati Bengals, with this turnover ratio stuff, it's almost mind-boggling, Dan. I mean, their numbers in the red zone situation, it's crazy. They're like 0-8 when it's negative. I do know that. I think they're 1-12 now.
For the turnover margin.
When turnover margin, when it's plus, they're 1-12 when it's plus. So they keep saying win the turnover ratio and win the game. What the hell? 1-12? I mean, come on, man. You know, and they won one game when it was even, and 0-8 when it's minus. So turnovers, it's almost like it's inconsequential to the outcome of the football game. Now, league wide, it's very consequential. But to this football team, it hasn't been whatsoever. Now you add a tie to that mix. You win the turnover battle. You're 1-11-1. Whoo! Raise the flag.
All right. Realistically, tying is better than losing. It doesn't feel like it right now, but it is better than taking a loss. And for that reason, I will at least give the defense credit for the very end of the game, mm-hmm. because they've got to be demoralized at that point. Joe Burrow just got sacked deep in his own territory. Philly gets the ball back at their own 44 with 1:26 to go. And with a chance to move within the field goal range of one of the strongest leg kickers in the NFL, they get the stop. They force a 5-yard penalty when Philly lined up to try a 59-yard field goal. And then 64 yards away, they elected to punt.
Yep. Said, I'll kiss the sister. Get those lips ready. Put on some lip balm. I want that kiss to be right. But, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, I've experienced this as a player. I remember going 0-8 to start a season, and we're, you know, just close in some games. We can't finish. Just can't finish. We start 0-8, and we're getting killed. Getting killed by media friends. I mean, my neighbors, I drive in the neighborhood with my lights out. Didn't want to see neighbors at night, you know, and I didn't go to the grocery store. Didn't go anywhere. So I know what it's like, and I hate to be a guy that's like, you know, negative about it because I've experienced it. I know how bad it is, and I feel badly. But, you know, it's your job to do the analysis and all that. And I am not gonna question the effort. I'm not gonna whatsoever. And in our 0-8 start, I questioned the effort of some of my teammates. And, you know, the eye in the sky don't lie. And there were guys dogging it, loafing. Don't see that. I mean, the effort's there. It's just not coming together. So I feel terrible that I'm like banging on them, you know, for not finishing and winning close, because I've been there. I know exactly what they feel like. I remember many times laying in my bed, looking at the ceiling, and it's like a big movie screen, and I'm seeing plays over and over and over again in my mind, and it's like, oh, damn, if I had just done this, if so-and-so had just done that, if somebody had just done this. And I know what it's like. I know I've lost. I remember losing sleep about it. I remember it takes your appetite. All those things, you know. And people say, you're making your money. It's not that. It's personal pride. It's like you play the game to win the game. You don't play the game to lose and tie football games. So, you know, I don't want to be hypocritical. I don't want to be two-faced. But, you know, I have to do a job, and you have to give reasons why things are turning out the way they're turning out. But, man, my heart bleeds for the guys. It really does. It sucks. Big time. Capital letters. Sucks. You know, you don't have any friends. All you got is your family. And sometimes, you know, you come home and try to kiss your wife, and it was easier kissing the opponent when you tied him.
An indictment of Lynn Lapham many years after the fact.
No, she was great. I'm just kidding. She was Lynn might have been the best athlete wife there that ever has been created.
Remove the might.
Yeah, she is, no question. Yeah. But honestly, I remember my kids. I remember my son coming home, and kids at school are saying, you know, the Bengals suck. Your dad sucks. You know, and I'm like, Dave, don't fight those guys. You know, let it go. You know, and he's all concerned. He's all shaken up about it. That stuff sucks when it starts affecting your family and everything. I've been there. I know exactly what it's like. I feel terrible for guys. I mean, right now they're 3-23-1 in their last 27 games. That does not make it an easy life to live off the football field. You got nobody to blame but yourself as a team, and the only thing you can do is try to make more plays and do something about it. But I'm telling you, it sucks.
I think that's a good way to end it. We'll look forward to Jacksonville in a few days.
I hear that. If they play just a little bit better, take advantage of a couple of the opportunities that they didn't take advantage of today, you know, Jacksonville's no world beater. But it is disappointing, Dan. The Philadelphia Eagles, what did they have left? What did they have left? I was waiting for Vince Papale to come off the sideline with a Band-Aid over his nose, you know, some tape. And Vince Papale to come running down there, cover some kicks. I mean, they were down to nothing. They were down to nothing. Unbelievable.
As Lap mentioned, a home game against Jacksonville is coming up next. The Jaguars are 1-2 and coming off an 18-point loss to Miami last Thursday. Let's end on a positive note with this week's Fun Facts segment as we get to know the person under the pads from a member of this year's rookie class.
Time for some fun facts with Bengals defensive end Khalid Kareem. Khalid, you are a coach's kid. and said once that you and your dad started your football journey together when you were 6 years old. How did that journey begin?
My dad, he was just actually just a parent at first. Obviously just a parent. More so just a parent watching. And then I think something happened with our defensive coordinator. And they were like, you know, is any parent willing to step up to, you know, help coach? And, you know, he was the first one. And he's been my coach ever since.
Were you focused on football or did you try a wide variety of sports when you were growing up?
I definitely focused heavily on football. Played basketball up until I was a sophomore in high school. I tried wrestling for a season in middle school and didn't go that well. I tried baseball. That definitely did not go well. I went to one practice, and the coach told me I was too uncoordinated, so I never came back. And then I tried swimming. I did swimming for a season. I was okay. The biggest thing with that was that I was always going from swimming practice to football practice. And so I was always tired at football. So I kind of gave up on swimming. And then last thing I did was I threw shot put and discus in high school.
We're doing fun facts with Khalid Kareem. In addition to being an excellent athlete, you have excelled in school. Were you forced to or were you self-motivated?
A little bit of both, but mainly the latter part. I mean, my parents definitely, you know, just kept high standards as far as academics. But, I mean, they kind of just set that standard. And then, you know, I kind of just embodied that after that fact. Like, up until like high school, it was unacceptable for me to get below an A. And then I got to high school. I'm like, you know what? It's okay. Like, the world's not going to end. Like, I think I graduated like a 3.85. And so I was still okay. I was still good.
So you almost went to Alabama and ultimately chose Notre Dame. Why? Yeah.
I mean, just looking at it, I mean, Bama's like, I think, 13 hours away from home. And, you know, I come from a pretty nice-sized family, so it would kind of be a little expensive for them to come see me, you know, play, or just, you know, even playing a visit just to come down. Like, you know, if they, you know, miss me and they want to come see me. But Notre Dame's only 3 hours away for one. A great academics, great football. And it was, you know, far enough from home where I had my own independence, but close enough with, you know, if I needed my family, they'll be there for me.
We're chatting with Khalid Kareem. You skipped the end of your senior year of high school and enrolled early at Notre Dame. Are you happy you did that?
Yeah. I mean, I was just having a conversation with someone about that the other day. I mean, you know, I finished my – so I played my senior season. But, you know, following that last semester, so I left following that semester. I mean – I felt like I didn't have really anything left to, you know, give high school. I was already done with all my academic classes. So I would kind of, not really just taking up space, but I feel like I would kind of be just, you know, wasting my time when I could be doing something, you know, more productive towards my career.
There are some great game day traditions at Notre Dame. What was your favorite?
I'd probably say the walk, honestly. When I was a freshman, I'm like, you know, I'm always going to have these. So I'm not really, you know, too pressed about it. But my senior year, I really, you know, took the time to take everything in, you know, the smells, the sounds, you know, everyone's faces. So, I mean, that was pretty big for me.
Do you have a miniature play like a champion sign somewhere?
No, but I need to get one. I do need to get one.
So early November, your senior year, you tore the labrum in your shoulder.
Yep.
You kept playing. You played the final four games of the season with that. How bad was the pain and why did you keep playing?
The pain was definitely up there. Like, I scaled from 1 to 10. At its worst during the games, like Boston College, it was really bad. It's like an 8.59 almost. Like, it definitely felt like it was about to fall off. But, you know, for one, I didn't know. I didn't know I threw my labrum at first. So I didn't know until after Stanford. So probably about 3 weeks after I toured, that's when I found out. And then, you know, I had one game left and I was like, you know, I've come this far and I played on it, you know, for these past 3 weeks. And I didn't know after talking, you know, with the doctors and, you know, the trainer, they're like, you can't make it worse. So I'm like, okay, I might as well play. Like, this is my last college game. I get to go out, you know, with my guys. And so I still felt like, you know, I had some left in the tank and I don't think I could, you know, look myself in the mirror. And at the end of the day, knowing, you know, I had some left and didn't give it to my team.
We're chatting with Khalid Kareem. You majored in business, minored in art, combine the two, and you have an art dealer. Could you see yourself buying and selling art someday?
Yeah, definitely. definitely can see that. I mean, I want to try to start that, you know, sometime soon, probably within like the next, you know, 2 years. I want to start trying to, you know, get more into that. And then, you know, I start getting, you know, further and further in my career, I want to start, you know, doing more with that. And then, you know, when I'm done, do that full time.
Are there any artists in particular that you would like to purchase a piece of their work?
Keith Haring, definitely. Definitely. He's one of my favorites. Timmy Sneaks.
Maybe second contract.
Yeah, definitely second contract. Yeah, but yeah, definitely. I want to keep Haring, please.
As part of your senior art project at Notre Dame, you did a huge self-portrait in a pop art style, 4 feet by 5 feet. I've seen a picture of it. It's pretty spectacular. You are in the middle, kind of an action shot from your Notre Dame playing days, surrounded by bright pop culture pictures and then images around it. How did you feel about that turned out?
I was happy with it. I mean, it's not really for anyone else but me. So, I mean, that sounds pretty selfish. But, I mean, I made it to kind of commemorate my experience at Notre Dame and, you know, what makes me me. And so, like, in the background on one side, it's a scarf that my mom, you know, has had. I think before us kids were even born, then a pattern of a tie my dad gave me is on the left, if you're looking at, on the left, and then a bunch of different, you know, characters and, you know, little things that, you know, mean a lot to me.
Like I said, I thought it was pretty spectacular, but I do have one issue with it. What's up with the Baltimore Ravens logo?
Okay, so it's not a Baltimore Ravens logo.
Okay.
My Little League team was the Southfield Ravens. And so that's what it was for. Yeah.
I feel much better about it now.
Yeah.
We're chatting with Khalid Kareem. At Notre Dame on game day, you covered your face in eye black, similar to Hall of Famer John Randall. Why? And do you plan to continue doing that in the NFL?
Yeah, definitely gonna continue doing that in the NFL. But I feel like that's just like, you know, my different personality. Like when I put the, you know, face paint on, it's just, you know, I'm turning to a, you know, different beast. And so once I put it on, I usually already have my pads on, already taped up. So that's like, you know, my final step in my preparation before, you know, it's time to play. So like, that's kind of like the final thing before, you know, I'm like ready to go. So that really gets me in my game mode.
Is it a pain in the neck to put on and off?
On, no. Yes. It takes a while. I mean, because I wash my face pretty thoroughly, and then like the next day I'll still have like eye black somewhere that I thought, you know, I cleaned, but it wasn't.
Describe your draft night experience.
It was a good experience. I mean, I thought I would go somewhere, you know, day two, but you know, I wasn't, you know, too upset. I knew, you know, either way, you know, whether, you know, I got drafted or I was a free agent, I was going to make an impact wherever I went, so I wasn't too stressed about it.
You're from the Detroit area. Who was your favorite athlete growing up?
Ben Wallace. That was my guy. I love watching him play.
Pistons do the dirty work guy.
Yeah, definitely. And honestly, when I played basketball, I tried to play like him. Definitely didn't have the skill set like him, but the physicality was there.
So at this early stage of your NFL career, what are some of the things you are enjoying about being a professional athlete?
I said the biggest thing I'm enjoying is just, you know, learning from the vets and just having the, you know, the older guys and the, like I said, the vets, them pushing me just to be better, because you're at a level, where everyone's the best. And so it only forces your game to excel. And that's probably the most fun thing about this whole experience.
You wrote a book in third grade.
Yeah.
And made an interesting prediction. What did you predict at that age?
I predicted that I would be in the NFL at that time, well, at this time, and Super Bowl 60, I was going to win MVP. I don't know how I figured out the timing and how it lined up, but it's actually obtainable, which is kind of cool.
So Super Bowl 60 would be February of 2023. That would be your third NFL season. So third grade you did some excellent math.
Yeah.
And this is legitimately possible.
Yeah, definitely is. Definitely. I definitely want to try to make it happen.
All right, you are off the hot seat. I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, no problem.
My thanks to Khalid Kareem, and here's a quick reminder to join Lapp and Lance McAllister for Bengals Line, Monday night from 6 to 9 on 700 WLW. Then on Wednesday night, I join Lapp for the Bengals Game Plan Show. That's from 6 to 8 on ESPN 1530. That's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Prime Sport, the official hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe, and if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks so much for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.